Radio News.
See them as people because of their situation, but they are just as active in the political world as everyone else.
Voters cast their ballots at a downtown LA homeless shelter.
Good afternoon and happy Election Day from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, November 4th, 2014. I'm Tiffany Walton. With the national spotlight on Senate races in states like Iowa and North Carolina, California voters may feel this election lacks some of the excitement of years past, and they're not alone. Sorry, we're having technical difficulties. It's expected that about half of the residents eligible to vote in Los Angeles County will actually vote in today's midterm election. Just before 4 p.m., about 15% of eligible voters in Los Angeles County had gone to the polls. That's down from 24% in the last midterm election. But some voters are doing their civic duty. Priyanka Deo finds out which issues were important to people turning up to vote at the Hoover Recreation Community Center in South L.A.
I would really want to encourage people to come out because that's the only way that we can actually make a difference. If you don't go, then somebody else is making the decisions for you.
I am a first-time voter. I'm voting just because I feel like it's very important for our country right now. We are going through a very tough crisis when it comes fiscally, so I do want to contribute to that.
I came to vote, make sure that money's going where I think it should go. We've got, local officials coming in, our school district. I have two kids that are, one just graduated from high school, one is in middle school, a lot of changes.
Don't let nobody speak for you. Speak for yourself.
Voters at the Hoover Recreation Community Center earlier today. Many of the city's homeless residents face an uphill battle when registering to vote. But reporter J.J. Maldonado visited one polling place that's helping the city's homeless cast their ballots.
Voters have been trickling into the L.A. Mission polling station in downtown L.A. today. The homeless shelter has 8 voting booth stations located in the rear entrance of the Mission. Election Inspector Pamela Whitehead says many of the homeless are also registered voters. She has been an inspector for 15 years and says the homeless have always been one of the most reliable voters she has seen.
So when we think about them, we don't see them as people because of their situation, but they are just as active in the political world as everyone else.
Poll worker Danny Whitehead says although turnout has been slow, the station has already had more than 60 voters.
The momentum really doesn't pick up. If it was going to be busy, it would have started out early this morning. So it's the same for the whole day. Sporadic. Then no one comes in, then sporadic again.
Whitehead said the station will probably get about fewer than 150 voters throughout the day. I also talked to a couple of voters who said they were happy this location was available, such as Emmerich James Conrad and Latrice Cash.
Oh, it's wonderful. I've been living in downtown LA since 1989, so.
And have you voted here before?
This is the first time here at this location.
I love voting here. Because it's my home experience, it's close and it's convenient. I know when I come here, I'm not harassed by anyone or anything.
Even without a permanent address, voters can still cast a provisional ballot, letting their voices be heard. J.J. Maldonado, Annenberg Radio News.
Are smartphones getting so smart they're able to diagnose you for depression? New research is underway for a smartphone app that could do just that. The app would detect changes in your voice that could be a signal of depression. I spoke with Professor Carol Epsie Wilson from the University of Maryland, College Park, about this groundbreaking research. Who is the target audience for this app, this coming app?
We are hoping that this data would be helpful to people who suffer from depression, whether that's because they're schizophrenic, whether it's because they're bipolar, or they just have some other form of illness that causes them to sometimes be depressed, so that they can monitor themselves, as well as we would like for this to be something that will help therapists you know, who right now they only get data when the person visits with them. But this can be data like if the person uses this app every day and they agree to their therapist receiving that data, you know, they're able to monitor the patient a lot more often, and then they can be in touch with them if there's a problem, if they see something happening.
Okay, so if this app is developed and if someone is downloading the app, does that person really need an app to tell them that they're depressed? I mean, if they're downloading the app for depression, isn't that a signal that they are probably already depressed?
No, not necessarily. I mean, some people suffer from depression, but they're not constantly depressed. You know, you think about someone, for example, who is bipolar, and they're doing really well because they've been on their medications. But then they go off their medications often because they start to feel really well, and they feel like they don't need them. And they slowly go back to being manic. Well, this, we would hope that this app would be able to help them understand when they're starting to move in that direction.
Okay, well, it sounds like really exciting research.
It is very exciting and very rewarding work, because hopefully we can do something that will be really beneficial to a lot of people. That's what we hope.
I'm speaking to Carol Epsi Wilson from the University of Maryland. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
You know them when you see them. Houses pushed right up to the sidewalk and towering over the other homes on the block. The LA City Council today agreed to restrict the construction of these so-called McMansions in some historic neighborhoods. Tim Vernon reports on why some experts aren't so sure this decision is best for the city in the long run.
It's known as mansionization, but all the name really means is that in some neighborhoods, residents are building bigger homes. That bothers many neighbors, who feel the large, often boxy houses harm the neighborhood aesthetic and detract from its historical authenticity. Ken Bernstein, a principal city planner and manager of the Office of Historic Resources, says the city council hopes a new plan will place a hold on the conflict.
Actually, it's a four-pronged approach to
right.
dealing with mansionization. The first is to take an immediate step to call a pause in development and demolition activity in some of the most effective neighborhoods through what's called an interim control ordinance.
This pause could last anywhere between 45 days and 2 years and applies to 14 different neighborhoods. During the pause, the city will revisit laws created to manage large homes, put new zoning laws in place, and create new historical preservation zones. There are already 29 of these preservation zones in place, and Lambert Gissinger, a historic preservation architect, says they represent a serious commitment on the part of the city, especially since officials have to survey every home in the neighborhood.
It's a large commitment, both in terms of staffing and resources to create historic surveys.
Many neighborhood residents are excited about the council's decision, but Gonzalo Freixas, a professor of real estate at the University of California in Los Angeles, worries that it will hurt the city in the long run.
Could affect values in a negative way, in the sense that people are going to be less willing to move into a neighborhood that has some older, smaller homes and move with the intent to upgrade them.
The city council will hear from residents of both camps in the coming months. Tim Vernon, Annenberg Radio News.
Today has been another sunny afternoon, and high winds and rising temperatures have prompted a red flag fire warning in South LA County. Winds up to 25 miles an hour are on the forecast for some of the valley areas and are predicted to reach up to 35 miles an hour in the Santa Clarita Valley. Later on Annenberg Radio News, one high school in South LA is trying some innovative ways to cut down on student suspensions. With a national spotlight on Senate races in states like Iowa and North Carolina, California voters may feel this election lacks some of the excitement of years past, and they're not alone. Reporter Matt Levin has more.
It's not exactly the same enthusiasm as voting for governor or president.
That's Miles from Lawndale. I caught him as he was coming out of a Starbucks in the city of Carson. Let's give Miles the benefit of the doubt and say he misspoke. He actually can vote for governor today, either Jerry Brown or Neil Kashkari.
You know, Generation Y and Generation, you know, a millennial generation, we just don't have a big enthusiasm for politics.
The data backs Miles up. A recent Fuel poll projects this midterm election to have the lowest voter turnout in California in half a century. The usual voter bait is the presidential election, or a hotly contested proposition. And that's just not the case this time. So, only 8.2 million of the state's 17.8 million registered voters are actually expected to vote.
Good morning. May I speak to Mr. Pitts? Good morning, Ms. Pitts. This is Michelle, healthcare worker, just calling to remind you today is election day. Have you went and voted yet? Great. Prophet Walker, right?
Just across the street from Miles, Shaq Abraham is trying his best to convince voters that this election matters.
They see the president as an election that affects them and their life that they can realize, but this is something that local campaigns affect them in an everyday, like going to school, whether you have enough books in the classroom, whether you have enough jobs in your community, whether your pay rate is going to be able to take care of your family.
On the wall of the SEIU's campaign headquarters is a giant poster with the number of registered voters in the district, about 59,000. Abraham hopes turnout is high, but he's refreshingly honest when it comes to his priorities.
So would you be more satisfied if all 59,600 came out and voted and Prophet Walker lost? Or if, let's say, a third of that came out and voted and Prophet Walker won?
I'd be satisfied if Prophet Walker won, because I know that what he's going to do for, you know, this district is going to be so great that he's going to give them an ability to finally have a voice in Sacramento. So if it takes half of the electorate not to vote for all of the electorate to benefit, I'll take that.
Meaning, elect Prophet Walker, no matter the turnout. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Matt Heller.
Without many tight races on today's ballot, most of the attention was turned to the long list of ballot measures. But despite some heavy media coverage, many voters on campus still found the propositions wordy and confusing.
Did you vote today?
Yes, I did. Just came out.
Yes, I did.
I did, yes.
I did.
Yes, I plan to.
What do you think about Proposition 1?
Which one's that one? I don't even know which one is that one.
I think that Proposition 1, which is water, I think it's a good idea. I think we should all be thinking about how to save water.
The water ballot initiative. I was in support of that. I think, you know, given the drought, it makes sense.
Honestly, I'm not really sure.
What do you think about Prop 46?
I don't remember what Prop 46 is. What is it?
I don't really have a clue what any of the propositions are saying, because I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to make it really ambiguous for voters, so they don't really know what they're voting on, like me. Like, I'm a typical voter, you know, I don't really read into all these propositions. I just go off the commercials and things like that. And what some things I notice is they like to make it really ambiguous, and we don't really know what we're voting on, you know?
We heard from USC students Ileana Velasco, Andreas Guanzo, USC staff member Aaron Brown, and USC students Chloe Powell and Andrew Chang. Theater company About Productions is reviving a play inspired by the Mexican poet Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz. Ana Gonzalez spoke to one of the playwrights.
I don't want a husband. I want books and solitude.
My name is Teresa Chavez, and I am the producing artistic director of About Productions. I'm also the producer, director, and co-writer of the play Properties of Silence. The story is set in contemporary Phoenix, Arizona, and it's a dreamscape that brings together the 17th century icon Sor Juana Inez de la Cruz from Mexico. It brings her into the lives of two contemporary people, a married couple, real estate agent, and a pool contractor. They find each other in a dream. It's inspired by the Sor Juana poem, First Dream.
If we dig deeper.
Dig deeper.
If we settle into the burning.
Settle into the burning.
If we dream the water's course.
Dream the water's course.
And in the piece, what she is beginning to hear is silence. She's beginning to actually consider what it would mean to stop all of her everyday activities and listen very carefully to her inner voice.
Properties of Silence will be performed at the LATC Theater this weekend as a part of the Encuentro Festival. Ana González, Annenberg Radio News.
For this special Election Day coverage, we turn to our political commentator, Matt Schwartz.
I'm Max Schwartz, producer and host of The Hot Seat with My Races to Watch. First is the supervisor for the 3rd District on the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors. Second is the 33rd Congressional District between Ted Lieu and Elon Carr. Third is the Senate District 26, Ben Allen versus Sandra Fluck. And one final reminder, you will be able to listen to Rachel Scott and I at the top of the hour at 8, 9, and 10 on ATVN.org. Max Schwartz, Annenberg Radio News.
It's Election Day, and low voter turnout is expected across the U.S. The 2014 midterm election has been one of the most expensive in history. Gabrielle Cortez reports about one demographic all politicians are courting.
Midterm elections are notorious for their low turnout rates. And tomorrow promises to be no different. The turnout is expected to be especially low among 18 to 29-year-olds. Millennial voters were instrumental in electing Barack Obama president during both his campaigns. But this year, he isn't running.
It's not just about voting, you gotta have something to vote for.
Steve Barr helped found the Rock the Vote campaign in 1990.
Nobody is going to hand over power or change things for people they don't know.
Millennial voters are the largest generation demographic in the country. A poll released by Harvard University's Institute of Politics found that among millennials who were definitely voting, most favored a Republican-controlled legislature. Republican vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan spoke directly to young voters in his speech at the 2012 Republican National Convention.
The issue is not the economy that Barack Obama inherited, not the economy that he envisions, but this economy that we are living.
The lukewarm job market continues to plague millennials, which is the most college-educated group in U.S. history.
About 70% of the increase in inequality is due to the differences between those who go to college and those who don't now.
Anthony Carnevale is the director of Georgetown University's Center on Education and the Economy. He says there is a substantial earnings gap among young people.
College is both the source of enormous economic leverage for millennials and the source of inequality among them and in the society at large. So
Carnevale says the recession affected everyone, but those without a college education have since been disproportionately left behind in the labor market. Ultimately, that rising inequality may be what determines how people vote more than the year in which they were born. Gabriel Cortez, Annenberg Radio News.
At most high schools, getting into a fight means you get suspended. But for many students, suspension isn't the solution. At Augustus Hawkins High School in South LA, administrators are taking a new approach. Sarah Zahedi reports.
Jasmine Urquia remembers walking down the halls of Augustus Hawkins High School last year with an attitude.
There was this girl, she like kept giving me dirty looks, and I didn't like that. We have a gang-related area, and kids really come to school to, like, watch their back.
When the girl walked into Jasmine's class to confront her one day, Jasmine says she let her anger get the best of her, and they began to fight.
I was trying to really, like, hurt her.
The school counselor then got involved, but instead of suspending Jasmine and the other girl, she sent them to Joseph Luciani. He began working as the school's restorative justice program coordinator last year.
Good evening.
and trying to understand where everybody's coming from.
The school's restorative justice program serves as an alternative to harsher punishments like suspension and expulsion. Luciani works with students in conflict resolution circles to talk through their issues. These circles are tools of restorative justice.
Students start learning a new way of dealing with conflict.
Luciani says the circles allow school administrators to help repair students' conflicts, unlike the process of punishing them with suspension. The restorative justice approach is what Jasmine says helped her. She had been suspended multiple times in middle school and high school for breaking school rules.
When they used to suspend me, I would just come back like, oh, forget this school. Like, they don't even care about me. They just don't want me here.
But once she took part in a conflict resolution circle as an alternative, Jasmine says she began feeling supported by her school.
I'm an understanding person now. Instead of getting just suspended, we talk things out so we could get to know what's going on. We dig in the problem.
Augustus Hawkins High School's restorative justice program came about in August 2013. It was the first program of its kind in the district. After just 1 year, Luciani says Hawkins experienced a 65% drop in suspension rates. Jasmine is now a senior at Hawkins. She says her experience has driven her to encourage other students to use these conflict resolution circles to deal with their problems as well.
It opened my eyes to see, like different.
LAUSD is now working to implement restorative justice programs district-wide by 2020, hoping to keep more students in the classroom. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Anna Sterling to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Anna. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Tonight on Annenberg TV News, we cover an evacuation at a Santa Monica High School polling station, find out what happened and how it affected voting. And a new safety app is trying to turn USC phones into multimedia emergency responders. Find out how they're working with the Department of Public Safety to make it happen. And stick around for real-time midterm election results. We'll have special election coverage all night. You can stream us live on TrojanVision.com or tune in to Channel 8.1 in LA.
Thanks, Anna, for the update. Firefighters and police will soon have more in common, financially, that is. A city council committee today approved a proposed two-year labor agreement that will put firefighters' pay on par with police. Firefighters would see their salaries go up by 2% starting July 2015. California's newest baby hippo went on display today at the LA Zoo. Taylor Haney has this report.
A group of hippos is called a bloat. The latest addition to LA Zoo's bloat charmed visitors today. Halloween marked the zoo's first hippo birth in 26 years. The new calf surprised zookeeper Mike Maxey and his staff.
We weren't expecting or hoping to have a baby, but it was a pleasant surprise. The female was on birth control, and just like humans, sometimes it's not always 100%.
This pleasant surprise means a new source of cash for the zoo. The right to christen the calf will go to the highest donor. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
Think you had a long commute to the voting polls today? Well, you probably didn't travel as far as rapper Little John. The Atlanta native flew from L.A. to Georgia at 6 a.m. this morning to rock the vote because his absentee ballot never arrived. Well, that's it for this Tuesday. We had help from ATVN Priyanka Deo, Maya Getter, Hillary Jackson, and Olivia LaVoice. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Madeline Ooles is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Andy Vasoyan. I'm Tiffany Walton for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, and if you haven't voted today, please go out and rock the vote.